The single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Learn how sales, marketing, and customer success experts create internal alignment, achieve desired outcomes, and exceed customer expectations in a personal and human way. This is the Customer Experience Podcast. Here's your host, Ethan Butte.
What's the key to success in building a relationship and referral-based business? Getting to the heartbeat behind the spreadsheet. That's fundamental to the approach of today's guest, who's been a sales leader for home builders for years. He served at Century Communities, Toll Brothers, Shea Homes, and Meritage before recently joining Beazer Homes as vice president of sales. You'll learn about taking a three-tiered approach to joining your next team, about doubling down on emotional connectivity, about making better tech and automation choices, and getting past the numbers and connecting with the people behind them. Amr Syed, welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast.
Ethan, thank you so much for the kind intro. And I was like, I wonder who are you talking about? It sounds like a nice guy. And I appreciate that, man. I really do. But really glad to be here chatting with you and looking forward to having a great conversation.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when we first connected, I mean, the shared values were really, really obvious. And there are things I like to discuss here on the show anyway. So I think this is going to be a really fun one. And we'll start where we always do, which is customer experience. When I say that, what does it mean to you?
You know, it's been a highly used word. Right? People think of it as like more of a buzzword, but to me, it's depth. And it's depth in truly having a connection and taking somebody through the, say, a sale or a purchase, and that's surface level. But then now, having an experience with somebody and giving them an amazing, not just an end result of a product, but it's the journey of to get to that product. Specifically in home building, it's the journey to have our family or our home buyer or our person living in that home, the end result. I always share with our sales team, we have one of the most amazing jobs in the world. We get to help somebody with the new backdrop of their life. It's not a home. It's the, think of every memory that you've had in your life growing up. It has a backdrop, and it was the first house that you lived in, the first home that you moved in as a young couple, married kids, whatever thing that all of our listeners experience, it is a backdrop. And in home building, we get to build that. And the experience is that end result in having a beautiful experience in the beginning throughout the entire process. So I think of it as a depth. I think of it as a connection. I think of it as not just check the box survey. Am I going to get a 10 on this survey? It's not about a survey. It's about truly putting a smile on somebody's face and thinking about the experience of the end result.
I love it. And I think that depending on if someone, I mean, I know there are a number of ways to buy a home from a home builder, but let's just go with the one that most people would think of, which is, you know, I want to pick from these designs. I get to customize aspects of it. It can be such a personal experience. And so as a consequence, very, very emotionally charged, I'm sure, hopefully for the better. And probably as a consequence of that emotional charge, people probably tell a lot of stories about their experience with home builders.
They do. There's no doubt. Because it's truly an emotional purchase. Are you thinking about the face-to-face interaction? There's a lot of, if it does well, there's a couple of builders have done an online, buy online, or you've seen that before. But at the end of the day, when you're purchasing a very personal product, it's that individual connection. And when you go to the design center and when you get an opportunity to personalize the backdrop of your life from colors to plan to layout, there are stories in how you're going to live in the home. So you're at the experience. It's not about, I'm not looking for a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, or you're looking for a single story or 2-story. No, I'm looking for Susie's room and Jimmy's playroom. And this is where my husband and I, or my wife and I, are going to split. This is our home. This is where grandma's going to live. That, it's not bedroom one, bedroom two. It's Bobby's room, Susie's room, grandma's room. That's what, when you're looking at the story of how people are going to purchase, that's how they purchase.
So true. And just being aware and sensitive to that changes that entire process. Before we get too far ahead, you know, you kind of teed up to your response to customer experience with the idea that, like, you know, it's commonly used. And I would infer, or I guess double down on the idea that perhaps overused or misused. When did customer experience as a term to kind of capture some of these qualities of the buying and selling process, you know, buying on the consumer side, selling on your side, When did that word start to emerge for you? And, you know, how did you receive it initially?
You know, at first, I think I think the intention was it went from customer service or are you satisfied with your purchase? It went from a baseline concept. So I think the concept was correct. But I feel like initially when we're like customer satisfaction, that's what the buzzword that was used 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 12, whatever. Then somebody, which is a great concept, let's take it to the next level. Let's call it customer experience. And I think conceptually that was right. Unfortunately, I feel like we just rebranded customer satisfaction to customer experience. The wording changed, but I don't know if everybody followed suit with this gap in, hold on, I wasn't trying to change the word. I'm trying to change the game, change the entire process. It's truly showing an amazing experience. I don't want to just want to change the word satisfaction to experience. So I feel there's a lot of people in not just our industry, but industries around. Let's just call it customer experience and do the same shit that we've always done. So now let's say, no, let's truly give them an experience. Call it whatever you want, but let me have a connection. Let me build a relationship. Let me truly understand the why behind the what. And once you do that, that's when the experience happens.
Really good. I love the way you kind of peeled that apart. And you're exactly right. Putting a new name on the same thing doesn't help anyone. Using new language to push us in an important and valuable way is. So you've already kind of teed it up a little bit, but just for folks who aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about Beazer Homes. Like, who's your ideal customer and what are some of the problems that you're solving for them?
Sure, of course. So we're looking from regionally for the Houston market. We're looking for move-up buyers who are truly maybe they're in their first home and they're ready to get to the next house. We build a really, really good home, a great product that's focused on energy efficiency with surprising performance. We really focus on choice plans by having included options that are at no charge to the buyer, that they can make selections and modifications at no charge. So it's really personalizing that from experience. And then also choice, mortgage choice, which gives our buyers the freedom to. A lot of builders will tie themselves or have a preferred lender. We stepped away from that and we'll give people a financial choice. So these are savvy buyers, savvy home buyers who purchased their first home, who know what that's like from a financial standpoint. They know what they want in their new next home. So that's why we do the choice plans. And they know that their first home or maybe the home that they're retail they're in is not built to the right standards. And that's when we do that surprising performance. So it's that type of buyer who's a move-up buyer who sees the value, but we're also... when it comes to experience standpoint, we want to provide an amazing experience and a really, really well-built home and a good product as well.
Love it. You told me that you had the, I'm restating, so maybe I'm giving you different words than you gave me, but you know, you had the privilege of stepping back a little bit in your career, spend some time with family and figure out what you really wanted to do next.
Yeah.
Tell me about Beazer from that perspective. I mean, how did you, I mean, you told me that there were like a few different criteria or a few approaches that you're like, that box is checked, that box is checked, that box is checked. Let's do this. Like, how did you approach that?
So, and we'll tie into your things. I think of the concept, however you treat your team, your employees, is how your employees will treat your customers. And when I was, took some time off, spent some time with the family, one of the best decisions I've made in my life, spent some time with my 17-year-old son and my 13-year-old son and my wonderful wife, married for 19 years, having the ability to take a pause and just doing that was a great recalibration for myself. But when I was ready to get back in the game, I wanted to really align myself with an organization that really took the time and poured into the people. And not only is Beazer Homes as an organization very focused on an exceptional customer experience, but they're really focused on providing an exceptional employment experience. And it wasn't just lip service. I really had a chance to meet high key stakeholders, senior leaders, and I saw that give a shit attitude in them. They truly cared. It wasn't just, I want you, no different than a customer survey, employee survey, great places to work survey. No, this is like, we don't care about surveys. We just really want this to be a great place for you to work, do good work, and provide that good work towards your team, and it outpours to our end customers as well.
Love it. I mean, that's a theme that emerged in the earliest days of this podcast. I forget what number this is going to be, 240 something. But in the earliest days, this idea of the better you make your employee experience, the more likely all of those people, especially the customer-facing ones, but really everybody works together to create an exceptional customer experience. And so really appreciated, I guess, because I'm sure a lot of people are curious. I had the privilege of a 5-week sabbatical. BombBomb started a sabbatical program. So I had 5 weeks away from work. And I truly, like, I got advice from a friend of mine that was like, make a list of all the things you do every day and every week and commit not to do those things. Because my tendency, and I would assume that you're, as a high performer and as a leader, you're probably oriented in some of the same ways I am. Like, I had this list of all the stuff I was going to do when I wasn't working. And it was all kind of like, it wasn't for directly for BombBomb, but it was all like kind of like professional development stuff. And he's like, set it down, back off, watch the sunrise, watch the sunset, make meals with your family, take walks, like turn off. And it was the best advice I ever got. I feel like you had an experience kind of like that, just because I think people are curious and you described it as profound. I don't know if that's the word you used, but tell me a little bit about that.
So to your point, the first thing I was like, okay, I'm going to go on this leadership development and then I need to go take care of this. And I was forced. So I was forced to step back, not because of, because of the summer. That's perfect. I have two boys. We went on a vacation, right? No one's emailing me. No one's calling me. It was perfect. Went to Orlando. I did all the Orlando stuff and the Disney Universal stuff, all that stuff. And then I did go on a development. I went on a leadership conference that I had committed to well before in July. But I added one thing to it. I called the conference holder up and said, hey, is it okay if I bring my 16-year-old son? He's a good dude, very intelligent guy. He'll participate. And they said, absolutely. This is a really cool thing. So my son came with me. So not only did I was doing that leadership development, but then I was building this bond and connection. And how many 16-year-olds can go to New York, sit in this amazing conference that was set up by Chad Sanchagrin and Cannonball Moments at Gary Vaynerchuk's office in VaynerMedia? 16-year-old gets to sit there. And not only did he sit in this office with me, they were calling on him. They're like, oh, you want to come to play? Dude, this boy was—he was saying stuff that was so profound, and I had some other people, conference attendees, turn and look at him and was like, "Are you sure he's 16? His answers were better than some of them with some of my employees." So on that point, so yes, I did that, but I was—I made a connection of like, I'm connecting my family too, and so we hung out. I also spent that time, you know, forcing myself emotionally to reconnect with my wife and both my boys, you know, reconnect with myself. I still stayed on a schedule. You know, when you take time off, you're like, well, I'm just going to sleep in and hang out all night. Now my alarm rang at 4:15. I was at the gym at 5 a.m. and my son came with me too. So everything that I was doing, I was attaching my family to it. So knowing that when I come back, you said this before, people like us and in general, man, we just grind, grind, grind. We'll go, go, go. Sometimes we don't look around and see what collateral damage will happen. And if we can take that moment and step back in a point of our career and realize and look around, all those places that we work are awesome. The things that we put forth is great, but who we do it for and what we do, it was a really great eye-opening experience for myself.
So good. I mean, I hate to go to the negative part of it, but this idea of collateral damage is really, really significant and easy to overlook. I think we overlook it in a lot of different situations. I think people who are extremely, and even companies that are extremely results oriented, and anyone who's accomplished has to be at least basically results oriented. We're so focused on that thing that we lose sight of some of the costs that we pay along the way. We're blind to them, and especially the ones that are human related, emotion related, connection related, et cetera. And I'm going to use that as my kind of transition into a phrase that you used when we first connected that I was like, I like that language. And I put it in the intro, and it's the heartbeat behind the spreadsheet. I think it captures so much of what I'm about in general in a business context. That's why it was so resonant with me. So I'd love to spend a few minutes here. Like, when did that language emerge for you? And just describe it for folks.
You know, it was just like ourselves. When you're the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with, right? So I try my best to spend the time with great leaders. And that was a phrase that a leader used to me. And when she said that, I was like, that's amazing. Because it's not just, we're looking at a spreadsheet of home buyers. And it's not just a job number in a construction stage. And there's people and there's a life behind it. And then as leaders in working organization, we're looking at payroll and we're looking at different details. These aren't just a job. These aren't just employee ID numbers. These are human beings who care about what they do. and they want to put in the best work behind it. So when we start, when we're looking at data, whether it's customer service, whether it's customer experience, whether whatever the data that we're looking at, whether it's employee engagement, whether it's down to a buyer list, look past the black and white ink, look past the 11 by 17, look past the Excel spreadsheet, look past everything and know that there's people behind there. They're living a life. And that's when we talk to that gap. And when we're talking about customer service and then their customer, whatever, we set the base and then that gap of that concept, that's the gap that people, that's the heartbeat. That's when you realize it's not about a term. It's not about a phrase. It's not about a concept. It's about an action. It's about an intention. It's about truly living that life of thinking about somebody. You're always acting within consideration of others, not as a pushover, but as a go-giver. I will give because I know the more I give, the more that person who you pour yourself into will do. And it's not for a selfish or nothing reciprocated. I don't care about that. But don't get me wrong. There are people that you'll give, give, give. They may take advantage, but those people don't last very long in your circle. So I'll never change of being that go-giver. I'll never change of acting within consideration. I'll never change of thinking about the heartbeat behind the spreadsheet because those that you impact is tenfold than that one person that may not see that way.
Yeah, it's so interesting, especially, you know, I think a lot about kind of the digital divide. There are things, even in an intimate experience like designing and building a home with a company, and speaking as the consumer now, you know, that experience I'm sure has been broken apart a little bit by the digital divide. I'm sure there were some steps that used to be done in person that consumers in general, or maybe the company decides we're going to keep doing these digitally because we did them digitally for some period during the pandemic. I just think about how remarkable some of those moments that we create when we can make someone feel like they're a real person and not a number. That's something that no one can really articulate, but we all know when we've been made to feel like a number.
Correct.
And when we operate culturally, I'm going to turn this into a question, I promise. Yeah.
No,
when
I love
we
it, man.
Operate culturally from the perspective of, and I've been a victim of it too. I export a report and I look at all the things and it's like, this thing seems to be trending this way, but it's like 15 people that made that trend happen. And I need to think about those people and understand them. And if I don't, we're going to continue to operate in a way, again, going back to your call, that's a smart one of employee experience, customer experience. If the employee experience says, this is a number, this is a trend, this is a spreadsheet, then in the customer experience, people are going to be made to feel like numbers more often than they're made to feel like individual human beings. And I think the difference in this environment, when more stuff is going digital, becomes actually a point of potential differentiation, as sad as that is. So my question is, how do you, as a leader, and this could be at Bees or it could be throughout your career, because I assume you've built and carried and developed these values over time, how do you coach people? How do you train people? How do you give feedback to your team members to make sure that they're creating experience that makes people feel more like numbers, more like people than they feel like numbers?
You know, there's some things that there's a coachable aspect to it and there's an innate aspect to it. You can't teach someone to give a shit. You have to meet somebody and they have to have, it's an innate. And don't get me wrong, somebody who has a baseline of, I want to care, but I haven't been in that environment can definitely be there. So as we're looking for, are you looking from a sales professional standpoint? Salespeople, because that's the department that I'll lead, so I can speak to that. I look for just really three key things. It's a positive attitude, high achievement drive, and coachability. So that positive attitude aspect of it is somebody who's genuinely a positive person, right? And that will be translated not only within the organization, we'll spread that positivity, but that positivity will be spread to the end customer to provide that great experience, right? The high achievement drive is obviously from results oriented. They want to push themselves to do the best. And then coachability, because if in our position, especially right now, the market is shifting, different things, you have to be willing to learn and always be a student of the game. So those are really the three concepts that were taught to me from my mentors that I hold on and I spread throughout. But it's truly that positive attitude. You have to find the individual who has that positivity and is coming to you with that positivity, not the baggage. And really, because that one person, and don't get me wrong, we're not perfect. There's stuff that goes on in our lives and there's stuff that we react. If that's the minority of the time in our reaction, and you put a team around you that genuinely has that positive attitude, That's the contagious part. There's a toxic culture, and then there's a positive culture. The toxic culture will occur when there are that poison apple, that seed of that negativity that people will always focus on. They'll always say, one bad apple will spoil a bunch. And you always see the images of the meme of the bad fruit, of the mold that's spreading throughout. But everybody's focusing on the bad apple. Let's focus on the planting the right seeds with the right team members in the correct attitude. Instead of solving our bad apple problem, let's go and be looking at the leading indicators of planting the right seeds with the right people who you're bringing on the bus, the right leaders with the right attitudes of putting people first, who will then, when I say putting people first, is not because putting our team first and really caring for that. You stated something, I'm going to backtrack on a question you asked me of, you know, why I came back to Beazer. One of the things that Beazer as a company really went into is called FTO, not PTO. So it's flexible time off, right? And I have my division president, my boss, came to me and said, hey, Amr, what are your Christmas plans, your December plans? And I was like, no, man, I just got here. You know, I'm going to work through stuff and I'll take care of this. Hey, no, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, what days are you going to take off? It is not a question. And so he put that to me of to, one, make sure that I'm continuing that balance of making sure that my family is put first. But it's also back to your point of, if my leader is pushing me to have that positivity and making sure that I'm balanced, then I'm able to do that to my team and our team is able to do that to the end customer. So that's when you're talking about how to create that entire environment. It's truly a symbiotic relationship that comes from every end of the organization. And it is something that I truly believe in. So that's why it was just such an easy fit from that standpoint.
Love it. I picked up this line years and years ago from a guy we're probably both connected to on LinkedIn, Tom Ferry.
Yeah.
And it was like, he defined culture as like, it's how we do it around here. Right. And so this idea of if your boss says, hey, man, no, when are you taking time off to disconnect and hang out with your family? That's how we do it around. That's what we do. That's who we are. That's what we do. And so it's the thing I liked about it that I think you probably identify with too, is that it's action oriented, right? The culture is not about the words. It's not about the policies. It's about how we act. It's how we act ourselves. And it's how we act toward other people internally and externally. And that is the culture.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And so people will put a mission statement and our culture is this. That's how we do it around here. And that, it's that simple. It's people who just believe it. And if you have to describe, so how do you breathe? Well, here's what I do. I take small, but no, I mean, I just breathe, you know? And yes, we have to define it so it can be coachable and processed and teachable, but you have to be around people who breathe. You have to be around people who do it that way. And there has to be an element of, that's how we do it around here. That it has to, once it's defined within an organization, that's when we identify it as leaders to make sure we're growing that within ourselves.
Really good. And I like the breathing metaphor. I'll add one more layer to it. I mean, periodically, you know, some of us will do something like breath work. We'll be conscious about our breath. We'll work on it. We'll breathe a little bit differently. And so again, same thing, like it's worth stopping periodically to review, how are we doing it around here? What have I maybe let slide? Did I let that thing happen, even though it isn't really, it didn't feel acceptable, but I let it go in the moment? And what are the consequences there? So stopping periodically to be consciously aware of how we're doing it is absolutely worthwhile. You mentioned, so we're recording this, for folks listening, we're recording this conversation in mid-January. It'll release sometime in, I think, early March. So I'm just giving this context because I'm asking about market conditions. And feel free to speak to this to more of someone outside the industry, because we have all kinds of folks listening to the show. You know, there's been a big shift in the market. Part of it is mortgage rate driven. There are other factors involved. The shift happened throughout 2022. Here we are in early 2023. Talk about what you've seen and how your philosophy about how business, because I feel like your mindset and your approach and your values are the kind of thing that will help. I mean, you can't outright beat the market, but people are winning in this market and taking market share. And so I guess with that kind of little monologue, feel free to describe the change that happened, what you think about it, maybe what you see coming up, and how you are managing yourself and the people around you to continue to be successful.
No, I appreciate that. And you hit it on the nail, right? So we can talk about what happened 2 years ago with COVID and how the COVID spike created a retail, regardless, not just home building and real estate, which was impacted, but hell, Chick-fil-A. Have y'all seen that line at Chick-fil-A when COVID happened? It still hasn't stopped, right? So think of every retail or any business that we're in and that has was pushed such at such a point because of something that we never thought that would do it. And now we're sitting back at interest rates and market conditions towards the end of last year that softened that. So we'll take all that the study, the armchair quarterback stuff out of it, right? Let's take the what we think or what we thought happened, but what is going to continue to happen? And what I feel and what the team that I'm working with will continue to feel is markets will go up and down. It is the consistent and constant behaviors that we put forth, regardless if it's a high market or a low market, that will allow us to be successful. You have to always outperform the dip. And then when the highs are high, oh, we're selling this much. Well, everybody's selling that much. What are you doing to overperform the high? And if when you can overperform the high and outperform the dip, when you are doing the right things, the behaviors and the discipline, it's not motivation, right? Motivation is superficial. Discipline is long lasting. It's the discipline, it's to do the things when, damn, I don't want to wake up this early this morning, or man, I'm going to make 50 phone calls, or I have to set X amount of appointments. When you're disciplined, that's when you'll outperform the dip. And so our mindset to the entire team is to continue to do the behaviors of whatever industry or whatever that people are working or listening to. There are things that we look at as what defines success. And in those, take that definition, in a tough market or in a changing market, that has to go tenfold. When you were making X amount of phone calls, when things were okay to get really good results, now we have to double that or triple that. And that's when you have to pour into more to outperform the dip. And so I'll speak to home building, but it's also with real estate. People's lives they're going to continue to live, right? People are still getting married. People are still getting divorced. People still have babies, aging parents. There's things still going on. So that hyper purchase time period in the parts of COVID took a rightfully so slowdown. Now, when people are, New Year started, interest rates are stabilizing, things are coming to a little more stability. I'm very confident that when this podcast airs in March, we will both listen to this and say, damn, you're right. Things really are back to a point where it's normal. And it's that normalcy of a cyclical buying cycle or a normalcy of people's living habits that are going to really predicate and push them to make the buying decision versus external things that, oh man, I think I have to buy a house because everyone else is buying a house. Or I think I need to go to eat at Chick-fil-A because that line is wrapped around 3 times. But it's now where people are going to start making the decisions that they have to make in order to continue to live their life. And you're going to see us get back to that buying cycle.
I love it. I mean, kind of to oversimplify part of what I heard there, it's people are still buying and selling houses. And we can choose to participate and work a little bit harder to make sure that it happens with us, or we can, you know, play victim to external forces and kind of like roll over. You mentioned some activities in there, right? And like increasing activities, probably from a disciplined mindset. By the way, I feel like a pretty disciplined person, but I get up at 5 while you're already 45 minutes up and at the gym.
Hold on, let me that 45 minutes is my startup time. My engine, you know, it's like I'm in the car, but I'm still cranking the engine. So yeah. I need that to get my back right, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, obviously you're talking about activities. Talk about like where I'm going here is like humans and tech. You know, what was happening earlier in your career with regard to successful selling, whether the market was up or down? How is that shifting? How has your team's behavior needed to change? I mean, you were leading a team 10 years ago, and I would assume that the team you're leading today, and let's just set the cultural differences and kind of the market conditions aside, like what's changed in that time? Kind of where are we going there? You know, certainly a lot of business models in these areas, mortgage, real estate, home building, are trying to maybe automate a lot of processes and perhaps automate a human out of the processes. Like, just speak to that. I mean, like humans, human activity, what they're doing, deploying tech to support them, but making sure humans are still doing step 1, 2, or 3. Like, how are you thinking about that and building systems with your team around that?
Well, I think of it like this. When you go back, look at technology, let's go call it 30 years, whatever. The phone, right? What we were using as a phone 30, 40 years ago, it was either the rotary or the foot. Now it's now it's this, right? And the concept of communicating, the underlying concept hasn't changed. The vehicle and the mechanism and the process that we're using has changed and has gotten better. And very conceptually, the underlying ability has to still be there to have that human connection, utilize technology to make it exponentially better. Do not utilize technology to replace the process. Utilize technology to enhance the process. And once we are enhancing the process, I'll give you an example. I'm going to brag on my wife. My wife is in sales and in real estate too. So she was sending a Merry Christmas and Happy Thanksgiving text to her and videos and text to her clients. And she was typing them all out. And we're talking and there's other coworkers that say, I have this automated text service that I can just type a generic message and hit blast and it'll hit to all my clients. And she's like, no, I was still using technology and I was typing, I had a baseline, but I personalized. Hey, Mary, hope Susie and Billy have a wonderful Christmas and hope. But it's just very, it's like from that, I got so many responses where my other coworkers, I did the same thing too, but it was because your shit was generic. You just got to hit the easy button. But I'm still using the same vehicle. I'm still using the same mechanism, but now I'm personalizing. That ability to connect has to still be there. Use the technology to enhance the process, not to replace the process.
I really like that language. I especially like the kind of beat down on the easy button. I think everyone's looking for it. And I think they feel like they've accomplished something in searching for, finding, and then hitting the easy button. It's like, I did it, you know, like, well, and you did some stuff, but this, like, it really gets to this idea of effectiveness and efficiency. Like that was probably pretty efficient. You'd set a little bit up, you click one button and now, you know, 1800 people have seen this thing or whatever the case may be, but that doesn't mean that it was effective. So I like this idea of personalizing. The other thing that was implied in the way that you described it is she's personalizing it based on her real relationship with those people. And the thing I appreciate about that is that we also see a lot of people using just generically variable data fields, getting some scraped data or purchased data, sticking it into the right slots in the message and feeling like it's, and is it personalized? Yes. But the difference is felt on the other side. Yeah. They know whether or not your wife knows their kids or knows of them and cares about them in some way. And that's the effectiveness piece. So I really love the way you describe that. Any thoughts on video as a mix in? And the way I'm going to tee this up is you said the underlying thing hasn't changed. Right? The underlying piece of communication. One of the things that's always excited me about video and has kept me here over 11 years now, which is kind of crazy to say out loud because that's a long period of time, but it's this idea that I view video as a return to the way that this was done 50 years ago, but just using today's technology and the spirit that you described, the intersection of humans and tech. Any thoughts on video?
I think video is going to be, it's the closest thing. Like right now we're talking and I'm smiling and I'm having a great conversation and you're clear across the country from me. And we're having this is the closest thing to the face-to-face interaction. And once you can get a video and a personalized video, right? There's things, and I'll brag on BombBomb because I've been a big fan. I've used it in the previous companies and I had sales team utilize it. And I believe that this is a great, again, enhancing a process by not only having a short message that's in the text, but then showing a good, impactful video that's personalized. Because we've all seen videos, and it helps to do a blanket message if you're trying to get a blanket conversation. But a quick, 30-second video of the home that I just showed a customer and saying, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Patel, this is a great home that I just showed you. And this is the kitchen that we're talking about cooking in. And here's the room where your kids are. And then you've personalized it, and you saw it, and you added it to it as enhancing that experience. I think video is a great additional, needs to be in our arsenal of communication. It has to be in our arsenal of follow-up. And I think once you utilize it, not just we can all take it from our phone, but now when we're talking about adding it to a platform and adding it to a service that can now track, enhance, modify, going back to be conscious about our breathing. You're talking about breathing. That was great because we can all breathe. The right people need to do it right. But now when you can be consciously competent, and you have this great personalized video that you sent to your family. Now, how did it perform? What did you do really well? And how can you make it better? And that's why I think this is a great medium to enhance the customer experience and enhance communication.
really good call there. I love the use case you described. I also appreciate your call to say, hey, we've been doing this for a week, or we've been doing this for a month. We've been doing it this way. Let's see how it's doing and get better from there. It's just this iterative, ongoing process. I'm going to go to something that I think will probably light you up. You and I have not talked about it before, but it's in your, and if you haven't connected with him, Amer is very present on LinkedIn. Amer Syed, A-M-E-R, last name S-Y-E-D, for folks who haven't looked at the your name, Amer, in the title of the episode. Hit him up on LinkedIn. You describe yourself in your headline as a servant leader. And I think just kind of staying in the spirit of where we've been throughout this conversation, which is the way we do it around here, the way we make our team members feel, and the way our team members make our prospects and our customers and other people feel. Talk about servant leadership from your perspective. When did you really start to identify with that language? What does it mean to you, and how does it connect to all the things we've covered?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. It started with, I mean, obviously something that you see people around, you know, being in an environment. I really think I had great, two amazing parents, mom and dad, who really care, and you saw that care. Two great brothers, and you have this, when you have this environment, an innate environment, that's what the foundation is. But as I grew into, let's call it sales, and I realized I was doing really well, unconsciously competent in producing results in my early sales career, because I really cared about people. And I really showed, I mean, I really wanted to help them. And I didn't count how many sales I had, how many, what my numbers were, or what my mark, I just truly wanted to help them. The byproduct was I was selling a lot of homes. And the byproduct was my customer service or surveys at the time, whatever. In fact, this is 20 years ago, they called it customer service. But that was, it was high. I had strong customer experience. I was giving an amazing experience to people. I was high proof, but because it was unconsciously competent. When I took a moment to measure my breath, to enhance the way I was doing things, I stopped and I thought, oh, it's because I'm giving and I'm acting within consideration of others. And that service is allowing them to have a great opportunity experience. When I was able to move into a leadership role, and the leadership role wasn't because I want to be a manager. No, it was because I had, you know, John Maxwell's five levels of leadership. I was already a permission leader. I was already a production leader. People were asking me, hey, Amer, can you help me with this? Just randomly. And because I want to truly help people, yeah, I mean, of course, then let me help you. Hey, this is how worked on this. I shared, I gave without getting. And that was just an innate. And I moved into that leadership role. It put myself around great mentors who poured into me. I kept on enhancing that aspect of it. So I believe to be the best leader, you have to give and you have to push and you have to be that servant to those who will appreciate it, who will take into it. And don't get me wrong, I always say this, I get burned all the time. There are people who will take advantage of it, but those people aren't in my life anymore. Very quickly, those people, the team members who I work with, who took advantage of it, they don't work for me that much. Hey, I'm a nice guy. Don't mistake kindness for weakness. You can't hang with me. You don't deserve this kindness. You don't deserve this, even here to work in this environment. You cannot do the behaviors and activities that produce high results, that give the best experience to our customers, that you are pushing yourself. You just don't get to work here. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you. You know, it's okay. And so that is when you're pouring into people, you see people light up, and even as a small appreciation, you know, there's when you appreciate people, you want to, it's the attaboy. It's really not that. It's truly sending a personalized message. I do my very best and I truly want to. It's not check the box. When some of the salespeople, they'll put in a sale, I respond directly to them and I say, thank you. Thank you for being a badass. Thank you for caring for your customer. Thank you for being a professional. And it's a small note of appreciating somebody. Right. Normally, when we're talking about the heartbeat behind the spreadsheet, we'll manage the lowest common denominator and we'll try to manage out the bottom 20%, or we'll try to coach up the people. What about appreciating the people who are doing the things right? Taking a moment to thank them for the people who are performing at such a high level. And when you appreciate them, that's no bonus, no commission. Of course, don't get me wrong. Everyone wants to make money and do well, but that thank and that appreciation goes a long way.
It really does. I've been stewing on this quite a bit, like over the past month or so, this idea that, and it's not profound at all, but it ties exactly to what you just said there, which is, I think most people listening to this conversation right now have probably thought of someone or multiple people, you know, one at a time throughout the day. Oh yeah, I should reach out to her. Oh yeah, I can't believe that happened to him, for better or for worse. Or gosh, I really appreciate that person. And we let these moments go. And I would just, you know, to plus up what you just shared there, I would challenge anyone to keep a running list of the people that come to mind. And just when you have 10 minutes between meetings, send them a quick email, send them a little video message, handwrite them a note. And if you're physically present, like leave it on their desk as a surprise. Like these little things, it doesn't take a lot of time. You already had the thought, and turning that thought into a little bit of action and an expression to another person, like it blows minds because no one does it anymore.
Nobody does it. And that's a good, and imagine like even a quick little video. If you send someone a quick little video saying thank them, man, a thank you note, putting it on the desk, it goes a long way. It really does.
Yeah. So good. I want to point to two other episodes that I think folks listening will enjoy. And I decided my theme for choosing them, which I do at the end of every episode. My theme in this time was like, you and I have so many mutual LinkedIn connections. So I just picked a couple who were past guests on this show that I really enjoyed. Back on episode 46, which is almost 200 episodes ago, I hosted Kristen Messerly, who's a pro in the real estate and mortgage space. We talked a lot about loyalty. Loyalty and empathy there. So if you like these kind of human themes and or the industry context, that's episode 46 with Kristen Messerly. And then 100 episodes after that one, episode 154 with Mario Martinez Jr., sales pro, sales leader. He's been a sales coach. He's featured in our Wall Street Journal bestseller, Human-Centered Communication. And in that episode, we talked about the art and science of sales in an era of highly educated consumers. So we talked about customer experience, but from the a little bit from the perspective of, you know, people can do their own research. I'm sure you, Beazer, probably has some tools online or something where people can get a sense of what they can put together. And so some people are coming to you like, I need a house and I haven't thought about it yet. And other people are like, I know exactly what I want. I want this model. I looked at the three kitchen options. We're looking at the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So like, how do we manage the art and science of sales in that environment? So again, this idea of discipline, tech, repeatability, consistency, blended with kind of the messiness of human experience, human emotion, gratitude, and all these other rich, wonderful elements that make us who and what we are. So that's 46 with Kristen, 154 with Mario. I'm sorry, I got off on that monologue.
No, I love it. I
got a few things for you here before I let you go, Amr. The first is to give you a chance to thank or mention someone who's had a positive impact on your life or your career.
I'm going to thank and mention my father. And I say this very emotionally. My dad was in the hospital a few weeks ago. Went to the ICU, had congestive heart failure, and he was my first mentor. And I want to share a story with you guys. When I was in high school, I was a shitty kid. I gave my parents a hard time. Like many of them. And as I was going through my ups and downs, my dad gave me this book. And just like every other 17-year-old, thanks, Dad, and I threw it on the shelf. When I was later in college, three or four years after that, I was in the Program for Excellence in Selling class at the University of Houston, and they gave us a required reading. It was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Man, I read that book. I ate it up. I soaked it all in. I think it's a great book I read. And after I was done, I put it on my bookshelf right next to the copy that my dad gave me 4 years ago, which I didn't even open. So it's the funniest thing. He was trying to give me some words of wisdom with me that I wish I had at that time, but later I stumbled upon it later. So I have two copies of that book on my bookshelf, my dad's old copy and the copy that I got issued in college. I share that story with you guys because that was my first mentor that impacted me. I have so many more stories about him and the fact that he was just in the hospital and, you know, back home, but still it's going to be a rough road ahead. And you said a couple of things that stuck out to me when you're talking about sending a quick video, sending a quick message. I connected with another friend of mine who shared with me, unfortunately his father passed, and he said, when I knew that our time was limited towards the end, I made a point to connect with my dad every day, whether it's a text, whether it's a video or a phone call. So I've been sending videos to my dad in the morning when I'm up at 5 o'clock at the gym. He's doing physical therapy with occupational therapy to get back in health. I send him a video. I'm finishing my workout, sweating. I say, hey, Dad, this is my workout. I just finished up. I need to see your video, accountability. So he's somebody who instilled that go-giver mentality, that servant leadership mentality, that loving mentality. He taught me a lot. He taught me how to care for my kids, taught me how to be professional. He used to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to an offsite job. He was an engineer. So I saw that. And so I share that with everybody and very emotionally. So sorry, I'm getting choked up because he is my first and my greatest mentor.
What a gift, what a privilege. And that was beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I guess I'm still going to stick with my next opportunity for you, even though it feels like that should just be the crescendo. Is there a company or a brand that consistently delivers a great experience for you that you'd like to shout out?
I mean, I'm going to say Chick-fil-A. I really say that because not only because the food is great, it's every time I go there, there's not a fast food. And I don't even think of it as fast food. I think of it as really good food delivered with a really great experience really quickly. And with the people who are always like, my pleasure, you know, thank you so much. They're thanking us. It's their pleasure to help us. They're giving hot, fresh fries every time. I get that big old box fries. I'm eating it fresh out, burning the top roof of my mouth with a smile because of the great experience. The line is wrapped around, but not only they said, you have to wait for me, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to come to you four deep with two people on each side. And I'm moving down the line so that way you can get. And every time I look and I try to pull in for that Chick-fil-A over with my kids or whatever, or even for myself, I'm like, damn, it's a long line. It's going to take me 20 minutes to get out of there. I'm in and out in 5 minutes. Great experience, great food, really quickly, consistent all the time, except for on Sunday. And then you can come back and get your craving on Monday.
Yeah, so good. Your experience is consistent, not just for yourself, but that is not the first time I've heard Chick-fil-A at this moment in these conversations. It's probably like the fifth. So that was awesome and really well described too. It's the kind of thing where, one of the things I love about hosting people in different roles and in different industries and different types of businesses and business models is that all of it applies. I would be shocked if there wasn't something about your repeated experiences with Chick-fil-A that you haven't pondered or that hasn't informed some of the decisions that you've made in this industry that you've spent several years in. And with that, for anyone who wants to connect from you, learn more about Beezer, where are some places you'd send people who've stuck with us to this point in the conversation?
Absolutely. Always connect with me. I'm on LinkedIn. You mentioned AmerSyed, Amer Syed. My email address is Amer_Syed@me.com. That's my personal email address. Go ahead and hit me up there. Beezer.com. Hop on. You can take a look at of a lot of cool things that we do with, like I said, our three pillars, surprising performance, choice plans, and choice mortgage. Mortgage choice, those things are really great for home buyers who are savvy, to your point, and learn a lot about our product. But please connect with me. I'll be more than happy. I love making new friends. And Ethan, I want to say thank you so much for this great conversation. Smiling like we're hundreds of miles apart, but I feel like you're right next to me because of the great conversation, great communication, and great smiles we shared together today.
Awesome. Thank you for those positive words. The feeling is absolutely mutual. As I said right off the top, a lot of shared values here and fun to spend some time dwelling in them in conversation. Appreciate you. Have an awesome rest of your day and have a great weekend coming up here.
Thank you, Ethan. Talk to you soon.
As we've learned time and again here on the podcast, the essence of customer experience and of employee experience is how we make people feel. But so much of the experience relies on digital communication, on faceless, typed out text. To connect and communicate more effectively with the people who matter most to your success, add some video emails and video messages to the mix. Save time, add clarity, convey sincerity. Be seen, heard, and understood, and make other people feel seen, heard, and understood. Try saying thank you, good job, or congratulations with a video. Try answering a question with a video. Try introducing yourself with a video. Try it free at bombbomb.com.
Thanks for listening to the Customer Experience Podcast. Remember, the single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Continue learning the latest strategies and tactics by subscribing right now in your favorite podcast player or visit bombbomb.com/podcast.